Okay, let's turn to Leviticus chapter 23 and look at verses 26 through 32. That section there describes the Feast of Atonement. So whoever has that passage, you can go ahead and read it. Okay, the Feast of Atonement, it's also called by the Jews Yom Kippur, which means the Day of Covering. Okay, and it's on the 10th day of the 7th month, and that day is basically the most sacred day of the year in the Jewish calendar. Okay, it's the day that atonement is made for the sins of the whole nation. The sins being that were committed during the past year. Okay, so it's a very particular day, and basically, as far as like atonement is concerned, that concept is very central to the law. Okay, we have to understand. You know, we have to understand why it was that the law was given in the first place. Okay? Turn over to Deuteronomy chapter 31, verse 26. And I want you to follow very closely a series of references that we're going to be doing in the law, particularly if you actually have any Jewish friends. These are kind of the verses that you want to share with them. Okay? In terms of why it is that they need a blood atonement offering. Okay? In Deuteronomy chapter 31, verse 26, what do we read?
Take this book of the law and put it in the side of the ark of the covenant of the Lord your God, that it may be there for a witness against you.
Now, when you read that verse, what do you take away from it as the function of the law? What kind of a witness is it? Yeah, it's not your friend, is it? It's a witness against you. Okay? Now, that word ark in verse 26 is the same word that's translated coffin in the last verse of Genesis. Go ahead and look at Genesis 50, verse 26. Genesis chapter 50, verse 26. See, that word coffin is the Hebrew word aron, which means, it's the same word that's translated ark. It literally means, the literal meaning of it is basically, it's like a lid. Okay, it's actually a covering. Okay, and it's actually the covering of the ark. Okay? Now, you remember when Paul in 2 Corinthians chapter 3, let's go there for a second, because looking at Deuteronomy 31:26 about the witness being against them, and also the fact that it was placed in the ark in the grave, you can understand why Paul would call the law what in 2 Corinthians 3 verses 7 and 9. Somebody read those two verses. 2 Corinthians 3, 7 and 9.
But the ministration of death, written and engraven in stones, was glorious. so that the children of Israel could not steadfastly behold Jacob Moses for the glory of his countenance, which glory was to be done away. For if the ministration of condemnation be glory, much more doth the ministration of righteousness exceed in glory.
Ministry of condemnation, witness against you, right? Isn't that what condemnation is? Ministration of death, laws placed in the grave, in the ark. You see that? So when Paul writes these things, he's not pulling it out of thin air. It's right deep there in the heart of the law. Okay? So we need to understand that. Now, if the law is a ministration of death and condemnation, what hope is there for the nation? Right? Well, where was God going to meet Israel? Turn to another passage in the law. It's Exodus chapter 25, verses 21 and 22. Exodus 25, verses 21 and 22. What do you read? So the word mercy seat there, the Hebrew word is kaporet. It simply means covering. Okay? It was the covering of the ark. Okay? And where did God say that he would meet the children of Israel? Would he meet them in the ark in the grave, or would he meet them above what? The ark, the mercy seat, right? He would meet them at the Kippurit. Okay? How did he meet the children of Israel at the Kippurit? At the ark covering. That's where we start to come into the Feast of Atonement. Leviticus chapter 16, which is all about Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, look at verses 15 through 17. Leviticus 16, verse 15 through 17. Somebody want to read that? Look at verse 15. You just that verse is sufficient.
And he shall kill the goat of the sin offering that is for the people, and bring his blood within the veil, and do with the blood as they did with the blood of the bull, and sprinkle it upon the mercy seat and before the mercy seat.
So the blood was to be sprinkled upon the mercy on the top, and when it says before the mercy, literally that phrase, the word before, means face. In other words, the sides. Okay, the whole mercy seat, the whole cover, was covered in blood. Okay, that's where the blood was sprinkled. Okay, and that's how God met Israel on the Day of Atonement. Now, why did God require blood? Okay, turn to Leviticus chapter 17 and look at verse 11. Why was it blood that was the requirement?
For the life of the flesh is in the blood, and I will give it to you upon the altar to make an atonement for your souls and for it is the blood that makes the atonement for the soul.
See, the very substance that sustains the life of the flesh in its fallen state, which is blood, is required to redeem or atone for the soul, right? Which is also why, basically, is there any blood in the resurrection? Turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 50. Get that passage in one hand and get Ephesians 5:30 in the other. Let's compare the two verses. 1 Corinthians 15:50 and Ephesians 5:30. When you read those two passages, see what's missing. 1 Corinthians 15, verse 50. What does it say?
Now this I say, brother, that flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom of God. You doth corruption inherit the kingdom of God.
Flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom of God. Yet what will we have in the resurrection? Ephesians 5, verse 30. What does it say?
For we are members of his body, of his flesh.
And he mentioned the blood there. Flesh and blood cannot inherit, right? Blood is the offending thing. Blood is not what's there in the resurrection, okay? And so as long as we are in this fallen state, it's blood on the altar that atones and that redeems man from the fall. The very thing that entered into the separation is required for its removal. Okay? Now, come back over and let's look a little bit more. Huh?
Make your point clear. I don't understand what your point is.
Uh-huh.
What's the difference? Make your point clear for me.
Okay. Blood is what entered into the separation. Okay? A man in a sinful state, blood is part of our fallen body.
Okay.
It's not part of the resurrection body. It's not part of a perfected, sinless body. Okay? That's a critical thing to understand, and that's why it's required for the atonement. Alright? Alright, now, let's go a little bit more into the actual feast itself. Take a look at Leviticus 16 again, because we're going to kind of be dwelling on that chapter for the rest of our time today. Leviticus 16. Look at verses 15 through 17. First of all, you have to understand that there's kind of, you know, the Feast of Atonement, which was all about blood. Well, of course, the very first feast that we looked at, which was what? The Passover, correct? That was also involved in blood, wasn't it? But there's one essential difference between the Passover and the Day of Atonement, and it's in this passage here in verses 15 through 17. Somebody read it.
Did you say 16?
Yeah, we already read 15, so go ahead and read 16 and 17.
And he shall make an atonement for the holy place because of the uncleanness of the children of Israel and because of their transgressions and all their sins. And so shall he do for the tabernacle of the congregation that remaineth among them in the midst of their uncleanness. And there shall be no man in the tabernacle of the congregation when he goeth in to make an atonement in the holy place until he come out and have made an atonement for himself and for his household and for all the congregation of Israel.
You see, the atonement at Yom Kippur was the atonement for the entire nation. It was a national atonement. Okay? When we actually considered the Passover many moons ago, Exodus chapter 12, verses 3, look at verse 3. The sacrifice was for what? Exodus 12, verse 3, what do we read?
Speak ye unto all the congregation of Israel, saying, in the tenth day of this month, they shall take to them every man a lamb, according to the house of their fathers, a lamb for a house.
A lamb for a house. You see, that was a salvation for the house, right? The Feast of Atonement, it was for the entire nation, okay? One was for a family, okay? One was for the nation. You see that? Salvation in the path, that was a personal, individual thing, wasn't it? So you can see that salvation is both individual, but it's also corporate. It's also a national, there is a national atonement, and that is on the Feast of Atonement. So that's a kind of a distinction that needs to be understood there.
Another thing, when the atonement was offered, it was offered solely by the priest, right?
Correct.
And the other one was issued by the individual.
That's correct.
So it's like
right.
God provides that salvation,
right.
But then we individually have to apply that.
Right. Very good. Very good. That's right. Okay, take a look at concerning this annual Day of Atonement, back at the Leviticus 16, somebody read verses 1 and 2.
Or were they both needed at the same time?
What's that?
Or were both of them needed at the same time? Or, I mean, you know what I'm saying? Why does the corporate one,
basically, of course, the Passover was specifically the redemption from Egypt, right? And it applied to each house that was there, right? Israel didn't emerge as a nation until she came out of that furnace, right? And then once in the land, there was this national atonement every year, okay, for the entire nation, okay? Now, on that particular day, it was very unique because it was the only day in the entire year that the high priest actually was able to enter into the presence of the Lord, right? One man, one day of the year, okay? Look at verses 1 and 2. What does it say? Leviticus 16, verses 1 and 2.
And the Lord spoke unto Moses after the death of the two sons of Aaron, when they offered before the Lord, and died. And the Lord said unto Moses, speak unto Aaron thy brother, that he came not at all times into the holy place within the veil before the mercy seat which is upon the ark, that he die not, for I will appear in the clouds upon the mercy seat.
He will appear in the cloud. Upon the cloud was the very presence of the Lord. Okay? And it's very interesting when you look at this, that only one individual on one day of the year actually saw that, right? But yet when Israel was wandering in the wilderness, they saw every day for 40 years that cloud. Every Israelite saw the presence of the Lord, right? But then when the law was enforced and Israel's in the land, and the redemption is complete, only one man, one day a year. You see, because the law, contrary to what a lot of people would like to believe, you know, at Sinai, what did it thunder? Stay away, right? The law emphasized the holiness of God, and it emphasized the fact that man was a sinner and God was holy, right? And if you look at Deuteronomy chapter 28, verse 58, you see that. Okay? Deuteronomy chapter 28, verse 58. Verse says, if thou wilt not observe to do all the words of this law that are written in this book, that thou mayest, what? Fear this glorious and fearful name, the Lord thy God. The law emphasized the separation that existed between man and God. Okay, that was the whole purpose of it. Okay, and because of that, man needed to have that atonement to bridge that gap. Okay, and so built into the law itself was that whole sacrificial system as we were just looking at. Now, again,
I'd like to make a point. Whenever you see any of these ceremonial feasts and so forth performed, you have a phrase over and over and over. And the phrase is that ye shall afflict your soul. And that phrase, ye shall afflict your soul, it has to do with realizing your sin and sorrowing over your sin. And on all of these different ways that they were to atone for their sin, they were to make them realize just how sinful they were. That phrase, afflicting their soul, a lot of these things that they were put through, it was just for that purpose, to realize their sinful condition, to afflict their soul.
Right. And that's why over and over, particularly in what, you know, the phrase that the pastor was just saying, it's all through Leviticus 16, Leviticus 23, okay? Particularly on the Day of Atonement, okay? This particular event, every year, there's some real fascinating things to look at here. In Hebrews chapter 10, verse 4, you read about it's not possible for the blood of bulls and goats to take away sin, right? Because those sins were covered over every year. That's what the Yom Kippur, the covering, the ark covering, it all speaks about a covering, but not a sending away. Okay? Let's take a look at the ceremony real briefly. Look at Leviticus 16, verse 9. There's basically three animals that are involved here in terms of the offerings. Leviticus 16, verse 9. What do you read?
And Aaron shall bring the goat upon which the Lord's lot fell, and
actually, I meant verse 6. Sorry.
Aaron shall offer his bullock of a sin offering, which is for himself, and make an atonement for himself and for his house.
So first, there's the atonement for the high priest, right? That's the bull. Okay? Now, next is the... Go look at verses 7 and 8. What do you read there?
And he shall take the two goats and present them before the Lord at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And Aaron shall cast lots upon the two goats, one lot for the Lord and the other lot for the scapegoat.
Okay, now these two goats were basically for the nation of Israel, and one was called the lot for the Lord, and the other was the scapegoat. Okay, now... As far as the lot that fell on the Lord, the Lord's lot, that's described in verse 9. What does it say?
Aaron shall bring the goat upon which the Lord's lot fell and offer him for a sin offering.
Okay, so that's the sin offering. That's the blood of that animal was on was what got sprinkled in the mercy seat there, the ark covering. Now, as far as the scapegoat was, look at what was his fate to be in verse 10.
But the goat in which the lot fell to be the scapegoat shall be presented alive before the Lord to make an atonement with him until I hand over a scapegoat into the wilderness.
Okay. Now, the two goats, the one that's the actual sin offering typifying the Lord, and according to the Jews, the scapegoat called Azazel was used to typify Satan. And take a look at verses 21 and 22 to determine what the high priest did with the scapegoat. And basically, well, read the two verses and see what happens.
And Aaron shall lay both his hands upon the head of the live goat and confess over him all the iniquities of the children of Israel, and all their transgressions and all their sins, putting them upon the head of the goat. Shall send him away by the hand of a fit man into the wilderness. And the goat shall bear upon him all their iniquities into a land not inhabited. And he shall let go of the goat in the wilderness.
Okay, so you see, basically the actual sins of the nation were transferred to this goat, right? The high priest was holding the head of the goat. He was confessing their sins over that head of the goat. In effect, transferring those sins on there, it says the sins were literally placed upon it, and then that goat was sent away to where? To a land not inhabited. Banished from the camp. Banished, you know, it's the sins were being sent away. Okay? Kind of like, almost like a type of Satan, in the sense that ultimately he will be banished forever from the presence of the Lord, right? So, so that basically was the... ceremony once a year that, you know, we know is the Feast of Atonement. And one very important thing to understand about this feast, okay, which is what we're going to conclude with right now, is take a look at Hebrews chapter 10, verses 1 through 3. And keep your hand in Leviticus 16, because we're going to look at verse 34 in connection with it. All right? Hebrews chapter 10, verses 1 to 3. See that? There was never a clear conscience concerning sins. They were not perfect sacrifices. They only covered over, and there was a constant remembrance every year of the sins of the past year, right? Indicating that the sins were never fully dealt with, right? They weren't taken away. Okay? And this is what we read in Leviticus chapter 16, verse 34. What does it say?
And this shall be an everlasting statute unto you to make an atonement for the children of Israel for all their sins once a year, and he died as the Lord commanded
Moses. So,
and he did as the Lord commanded Moses.
Right. So once a year, there was this conscience remembrance of sins, and the sins were covered over for that year, but they were never sent away. Okay? The old covenant did not do that for him. Okay? Which brings us to what we're going to look at next week. Okay? Which next week, we're going to take a look at the new covenant, where it does exactly just that, and we'll see how Israel and what Israel's experience will be in the day of that fulfillment. So on that note, we'll conclude.